With that, I want to introduce SMTC Corporation, SMTX. We have the CEO, Eddie Smith, here, and the CFO, Steve Wozniak. With that, I'll turn it over to Eddie, and he'll tell you all about his great story there and have some time for questions at the end. Thanks for coming, Eddie, Steve. We appreciate you guys being here.
Thank you. Thanks for the introduction, and thanks for all of you to take your time out of your day. It's funny with the Weinberg thing up here. It brings back one funny story I'll tell just real quick. Funny story. I was presenting to the BAE Corporation, to their whole supply chain. They asked me to present to the supply chain. I got up here to the podium, and the guy hit the first slide, and an insurance company came up. And so I figured I'd just present the insurance guys thing. I went through like three or four slides before they realized that it was the wrong presentation. So it kind of reminds me of that too. SMTC is a great story. Actually, things have been going extremely well for us. If you think back 2 years ago is when I started with the company. I just had my anniversary. Company that sales were declining, losing money. It was in tough shape, no doubt about it. First year out of the gate, so the first 12 months, we turned it around. Sales grew about 50% year on year. Profitability went from losing money to making a couple million dollars of EBITDA. And then last year, that growth continued in the 40% range. And so late in the year, and this kind of was interesting on Friday, I learned some valuable lessons about how to send the message on Friday. We bought a company called MC Assembly, and it's kind of interesting when we bought MC Assembly. When we started talking to them, they were bigger than us. When we bought them, we were bigger than them and more profitable than them. So when we announced the stub period last Friday, our stock vacillated dramatically, way up and then way down. Partly because I think when you have to announce a stub period, so maybe that's the best learning I learned, is try not to buy a company mid-quarter, because it really makes it difficult for people to get through the mess of numbers of what's really the compares, what's not the compares, and all of that. When you get past all the craziness of the quarter and the stub period, what really was meant to be said was quarter on quarter or year on year, the growth was double digits. And so in the midst of an acquisition and integration, we were able to grow the business almost 20%. And, you know, that kind of got lost in the whole messaging of stub periods versus performer versus gap. And so our stock vacillated way up, and then our stock came way back down. And so a lot of people asked me, you know, what happened and how did that happen? And my answer was we probably weren't as clear as we could have been. And then the second thing is, if I ever buy a company again, it'll be at the end of the quarter. And I knew that lesson a long time ago. We at Avnet, when we bought many companies, we would not close a mid-quarter. We would close either beginning or the end of a quarter. And so if I could take back that, I would, but timing just worked out to be what it was. So now we're in what I would call heavy growth period of time. I'll just use this. Little forward-looking statement. So, came in, like I said, the first bullet's really talking about to create one of the best mid-sized providers of EMS services. I think, as you would tell, that's going pretty well. We're gaining both in our existing customers and we're gaining new customers. We did say on a conference call that we've landed about 10 new projects, even in the middle of this integration also. So that's pretty exciting. When you look year over year, our revenue is up about 109%, and that's with the stub period. If you took it as a full quarter, that would be significantly even higher than that. If you take year and year overall for the year and only having MC for 5 weeks, we were still up 55. If you only took SMTC, it would still be start with a 5. So it's a pretty exciting time for us, heavy growth in an industry that's not normally known for growth. I get this question many, many times when I'm on road shows and speaking to investors of why are you growing faster than many other people in an industry that's not really known for growth numbers like 40%, 50%? And my answer is I think through consolidation, it opened up a space in this industry that customers are looking for a high quality, great operational company, and I think we fill that space for them. And when I talk about quality, I brought a COO, and I'll talk in about the leadership team. But we measure our quality daily. I have it on my phone every day. I can see the quality in every factory around the world. Most companies our size don't measure to that level. The gentleman who runs our operations came out of Intel, and if you know the Intel way, quality is built into what they do. And then the other thing we can do as a Tier 3 that most Tier 3s can't do that's pretty impressive is we actually can go from cradle to grave with our product's life cycle. So we can actually build a board, we can bend metal, we can create cable and harness, we can do everything. The only thing we don't do is plastics. And the reason we don't do plastics is because the Chinese do a really, really good job of that, and it just makes no sense for us to get into that business in terms of profitability. And then last but not least, we transformed the company, went from $200 million to $400-and-some-million company on November 9th. Why we did it? We wanted to. We needed more capacity. We wanted to diversify our customer base. I think this is going to be interesting because I think as the U.S. economy decides how much it's going to slow and what's going to happen with the U.S. economy, I think we're very well protected. We have a very spread out end market game in diversification. So we have a little of our business in medical, a little bit in defense, test and measurement. When you look at that and you start looking at all the different segments we are, if one segment gets hurt more than the other, we'll actually be able to weather that much better, no doubt about it. And last but not least, one of the reasons that I looked at MC Assembly and bought them is they're really big in the RF space and communication space. And you might say, why is that important? IoT is going to be all about RF and communications, how to get the information off a sensor into the web. And we're able to do that. We have quite a sophisticated facility down in Florida that does it. We're right in Space Coast, so we get a lot of good people from a lot of the defense aero companies that can do these type of things to communicate with satellites and all of that. And so that's pretty important to us. We also have very little overlap. So when we bought the MC, one of the things that we measured, we started with 127 companies, took it down to 23, and actually negotiated with three. But the way we figured out who we were interested in and not, part of it is we wanted no overlap with customers. We felt like that might lose us a customer or two, and we decided we didn't want to take that risk. And so we have no overlap with customers, so that was pretty good. The other part was the manufacturing footprint. So we had the West Coast, we had Mexico, and we had China. This gave us East Coast, further into Mexico, and no Asian presence. So we're now in the Northeast, Southeast, and in the West. The West is kind of an interesting one because we're on the same street as Tesla. And if you're on the same street as Tesla, that's kind of crazy. We don't put up tents and build cars. And, you know, I drive by Tesla, and they don't put up buildings. You know, you used to think of manufacturing facilities put up buildings. These guys put up lights, maybe a tent, and then start building more cars. And I find that fascinating for sure, no doubt about it. We originally came out with cost synergies of about $6 million, and why that number is so significant. If you took the EBITDA of both companies, that's $18 million. If you add this cost synergies to that, you're looking at a $24 million plus synergistic EBITDA. It'll cost us about $3 million. We're well on our way to getting there. As I said on a conference call, there's really nothing that slowed us down. We believe we found more synergies, and we will, over the next couple quarters, realize those. They're a little bit more difficult. They're not people. They're processes and different things that we can do there. So the philosophy, is, if you kind of look at this crazy mash of stuff in the middle, you know, we were strong in power, energy, networking, communications. They were strong in telecom, aerospace, defense, clean technology. The stuff in the middle we both had, as you can see, it expanded the type of customers that we do for sure. We had five sites. They had three sites. I won't bore you with a lot of the other, but no doubt about it, Mexico is becoming more and more important. It's probably the big thing that came out of that. People ask about Mexico, so I'll talk about Mexico right now. One of the ways that the whole tariff thing has affected the EMS space is more and more people are building in Mexico because Mexico doesn't have tariff on. So you bring parts in to Mexico under one Hermana code, you build product, and it comes into the U.S. under a different Hermana code, and obviously the tariff is then avoided. So clearly Mexico is going to continue to grow. If you think about Mexico in the automotive space, they've grown 24 million square feet of automotive manufacturing down there in the last 5 years. and I don't see that slowing down at all. So we're going to continue to expand in Mexico. We just took another building in Mexico, and I would say that that will continue down there. Our vision is to achieve double-digit growth with our existing customers by winning new programs. The easiest way for us to grow, and the easiest way we've grown so far, is to say to our existing customers, we're better than our competitors. We can do higher quality, we're better on-time delivery, give us more business, and that has been very successful for us. About 50% of that 55% number that we talked about on growth, about 50% of that is our existing customers giving us new programs. Increase business with existing customers through world-class service and then become provider of choice and win new customers. The other 50% of that growth has been in winning new customers. The reason we did both, new customers, existing customers, is you can get up and running quicker with your existing customers. You're already there. You don't have to set up credit. You don't have to do a lot of qualification. With new customers, to take a new customer from beginning to get them up to a reasonable manufacturing level, it takes somewhere between 6 and 9 months. So when we announce a new customer before we actually see significant revenue, it normally takes 6 to 9 months to get to that revenue and that profitability. So the thought was, hey, let's go grow with the ones we're already in quicker, then let's go add new customers on top of that for a longer term. And then we want to drive value through M&A, expand the mix of our lines of business, increase our TAM, and supply chain synergies. One of the ways we're going to increase our TAM is to be able to do more life cycle and supply chain things. I would tell you right now, and I would say this with no hesitation, one of the things we do better than anybody in our segment is supply chain. Now, that wouldn't surprise you, considering that 4 of the top 5 executives came from Avnet, the largest distributor of components. 70% of our revenue comes from the supply chain. So the thought was, let's be the best supply chain company in the industry. If you look at our progression of best in class, and anybody that's heard me present before, my answer is, if you want to be a great company, you better be better than all the others before you can claim that you're a great company. So this is our march to being best in class. So if you look trailing 12 months, it's $216 million. We announced forward guidance between 96 and 100. So obviously, as you can see, that we'll jump to being the second biggest after next quarter. Our gross profit trailing 12 months is 10.02. Q4 was 10.25. And in our business, as you grow, your gross profit gets better. You utilize your factories better. And I would expect by the end of the year that to be somewhere 12 plus. Our adjusted EBITDA trailing 12 months, we were 4.75. And last quarter, we were 6.58. As you can see, we're getting close to being best in class there. And then obviously net income. This is GAAP. If you went non-GAAP, we would actually be positive. So just something to take a look at of what we mean by being best in class. Our leadership team, I couldn't be any more proud to say for a $400 million company, we have one of the best leadership teams that I think. We have Steve Wozniak, who's here today with us in the back there. Steve's been the CEO of companies like BTI Systems. He's worked at Ciena, Deloitte early in his career, and he's our CFO. Rich Fitzgerald's worked at Intel, CTS, and then obviously Avnet. He worked for me running my global operations at Avnet. Terry Wegman ran sales for a portion of Avnet. And then Phil Worley has an interesting background. He started at Motorola, went to Apple, and then worked for me for about 8 years at Avnet running my supply chain, buying about $6 billion of parts a year. So, interesting team. If you look at the stock price and how this has all led, 2 years ago, stock price was about $1.20. This week, it's vacillated between $4.50 and $6.30. So it's been quite the ride this week, for sure. And I think it has to do with the messy numbers of acquisition stub periods, people trying to figure out. And then probably the other big question that I get is, when we put forward guidance out for Q1, why does it look flat to Q4? And that's pretty simple. We normally actually go down Q1 to Q4 because of seasonality. Last year we went down almost 7% on the top line. I'm actually pretty proud that we actually will beat Q4 numbers with our Q1 numbers. That will be a first in 10 years. And so it actually shows you the growth and the progression that we're going through. So this year we don't have the seasonality that a lot of people talk about. But, you know, this is because we have new customers. The existing customers will still suffer the same seasonality that they normally suffer. You know, I could go back to all the history. I won't bore you with all the history other than we are now a growth story after going from a turnaround story to an M&A story to now a growth story. And so the story of what we're trying to accomplish turns into growth. And in our space, growth is really important because growth is profitability. Because once you have a plant, you don't have to pay for the power twice, you don't have to pay for the infrastructure twice, you don't have to pay for the management team twice. The more business you can put in particular sites, the more profitable you get. So a little bit about the footprint. We're in up in Massachusetts in Billerica. It's a nice little site there. Not one of our bigger. We're then down in Melbourne, Florida with one of our bigger sites. Melbourne, Florida was really how MC started. So it's pretty fun when you hear the history. They started out helping NASA do test the equipment. They then went into the assembly business, and now they're right in the middle of Space Coast Highway there. When you drive 5 miles from that plant, you'll see all the major contractors in the defense aerospace business. And as we grow here, that will be a major focus for us. We're then in Zacatecas, Mexico, with a PBC plant there. And that has the interesting distinction, to be the geographic center of Mexico. So if you were to cut Mexico right in the middle, Zacatecas would be right in the middle. It's an old city, been there for a long time. And if you look outside our plant, you will see the biggest Corona factory in the world, just in case you want to ever come visit us. Interesting enough, in Chihuahua, so just the opposite, we must like liquor. Chihuahua is right by where the tequila is harvested. And so you can actually go up and drink tequila if you come to our Chihuahua plant. Our Chihuahua plant is a pretty interesting plant because our Chihuahua plant used to be the old Zenith TV plant. So if you think about what TVs were made of before, metal bending, LCD screens, all of those type of things, our Chihuahua plant is really a very sophisticated plant. When Zenith left, we went and put an EMS place in our Chihuahua plant. We then put a supply chain center in Phoenix, Arizona, so that's pretty new. Fremont, we build. Like I said, we're on the same street as Tesla. That's always exciting. Toronto, Canada, which everybody always asks me how many people. We have 28 people in Toronto, Canada. That's really down to our engineering and finance group for the company. So it's 28 people up in Toronto, Canada. SMTC stands for, and it came out of Toronto, Canada, it used to be Surface Mount Training Center. And you might say Surface Mount Training Center for who? And that was IBM. So we were spun out of IBM, and we were a Surface Mount Training Center, and that's why it's Toronto, Canada. If you think about who else is in Toronto, Canada, Celestica, we were the training center, they were the production center, and we were both spun out of IBM way, way back. These are the markets we serve. Medical and safety will continue to grow in the medical and safety market. Semiconductor equipment market, I think this goes to my first little part, blurb about how companies, and as the industry slows down, if you haven't noticed, the semiconductor equipment companies are slowing down. We actually are still riding the wave because we have some new technology. We're into retail and payment systems. So if you go to a gas station and you put your credit card into a gas station, 80% of the time you're paying through a system we've built. In the U.S., we have about 80% market share there. If you ever go to a Chili's and some of the others, we actually make that little thing where your kids play the games and then you pay and you get your receipt at the table. We do that also. Test and measurement, we work for many of the best test and measurement companies in the country. Industrial power, clean technology, we do everything from the windmill type stuff all the way through metering, water metering, gas metering, that type of stuff. And then defense and aero, when we bought MC, we bought some of that business. So to go through the numbers real quick, you can kind of look at the different marketplaces. As you can see, the biggest marketplace we have is the payment marketplace at 24%. You know, it's really very diverse, and that's going to save us as the markets, different markets go up and go down. And so I'm pretty excited about that. This is some of our manufacturing discipline. I won't bore you with this because if I went through all of this, I would be bored also. But here's probably the most important part, the financial part of the growth, part of the business. When we put these slides together, as I could tell you, it was only 313. Our stock was 502. It jumped up to 630 and then dropped back to 450. And this morning, it's actually moving back up. So a lot of people talk about debt. We have a Term A, a Term B, and a revolver. So we have about $80.8 million in bank debt. And then we have some capital leases. The capital lease, interesting, is how you have to now qualify building leases into a capital lease because of how long they are. So it's not your typical capital leases that we used to talk about. And then income statement, this was the stub period of $80 million, $855. If you take non-stub period, combining both companies, you would have been $96.3 million for Q4. And that's a dramatic difference from $38 million a year ago, if you think about the difference in those two numbers. You look at the EBITDA and adjusted EBITDA and what that looked like, you know, it looked like almost $6 million of adjusted EBITDA. So quite the turnaround as you look. I think there's been some notes put out today that would explain some of these numbers even more in depth than I'm going to do here. And then last but not least, if you take the trailing 12 months at $345 million, and this is where I think it got a little confusing on the call and had things vacillate, and you look at the adjusted EBITDA of $18 million, we talked about synergies of $6 million. So, you know, the minimum you should see on the EBITDA is $24 million plus, and then the top-line revenue will continue to grow. And, you know, some of the people that put analysts that start with a 4, plus, and I think that's probably very accurate. So pretty exciting time for us in terms of growth. Cash-to-cash conversion cycle, we're still one of the best in the industry. The average is 78 days. We're at 67 days in terms of converting our cash. We'll continue to do that. It makes us more efficient. We'll continue to work there on that. And then I'll end with, I think we're a stronger company today, obviously, than 2 years ago, but even a year. We were two customer-driven, full-service, leading turnkey EMS companies. We were some of the best. We are dedicated to operational supply chain excellence, and we now have a shared vision that will drive us to new levels. And then for you, the investor, why would you invest in us? Clearly, one is the leadership team. The last time we did this, we took a stock from 38 cents to $15, and we did that in less than 3 years. We took this stock so far from $1.20 in 2 years to over $5 a week ago. I see that continuing. Our operational excellence allows us to continue to grow and have metrics better than our competitors. Our customer base is tier one customers. We don't have any customers that I worry day to day. Are they going to be here next week, next year? These are all top-notch customers. And then we're going to deliver shareholder value. So far, I think we've done a pretty reasonable job of that, but we got some more work to do to finish the integration and get us where we can get. So with that, I will take any questions that we possibly have.
And we look forward to doing the Mexico liquor tour at some point.
So do I.
Can you talk about the tariffs? I think it's on people's minds, and it seems like there is a transition of manufacturing to Mexico. What kind of revenue bump has that given you to date, and what kind of, more importantly, what visibility do you have now? That process doesn't happen overnight, so I'm curious what your visibility is there.
Yeah, so the tariffs are a crazy moment, right? One of the things I always say is, who knows what the next tweet will bring or what will happen? I can't react to that, so all I can react to is what I know. And when the first tariffs came into place, we had a $13.8 million risk for our customers, and that's a pretty significant risk if you think that we were at $200 million. 6.5%. We've been able to, by moving customers to Mexico, we've been able to lower that 13.8 to less than $1 million. So clearly, I think companies are moving more and more to Mexico out of the U.S. and out of China. I don't think that slows down, because now I think companies have found ways to be more efficient in Mexico. So I think China's going to become the Asian manufacturing center. I think Mexico will become more the North American manufacturing center. And then if you want really low cost, you'll move to either India or even further into the Middle East, interesting enough. So the tariffs, you know, for me, and I know personally on one side I say one thing and on a business side the other. On the business side, the tariffs are good for me because they've moved more and more to Mexico, and we've picked up customers that want to build in Mexico. And since we're one of the better manufacturers in our space in Mexico, the tariffs have helped us. On the personal side, obviously, nobody wants to pay more for electronics, so on a personal side, I'd rather them go away. But right now, it's helped us a lot, and I would say it's probably grown our business 20% year on year.
Great. We'll take questions from the audience if there are, and I'll repeat them for the webcast. Nifty. Just to repeat the question, Eddie. It seems like when you get new customers, are they coming in through additional projects, or are you taking business from other EMS customers?
It's mostly taking business from our competitors. I'd like to say it's moving outsourcing more, but it's not. Most of our customers that we're going to outsource have either outsourced. So it's more taking from our competitors. We do that, you know, through operational efficiency, supply chain. I could tell you one funny story. We had a customer that we had done business with in my days and Rich's days from Avnet. They were lined down with the EMS provider they had, which was a tier one. They called us to get them parts. We got them parts and up and running in 2 days. Then they called us again, and my answer was, okay, I can only help you so many times, so you have to give us some business. And they turned out to be a $15 million customer. The question is it mostly from tier ones or is it from others? I would say it's the lower tier ones. Some of the tier twos is really where we're winning most of the business. So I can see the next groups coming in.
Yeah.
I want to thank everybody for your time. Unless there's one more question, I guess.
Any quick questions? Excellent. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great.